Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Sunday's UFC Fight Night 124 event, which takes place in St. Louis, Missouri. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost 2 units for UFC 219 after going 0-2 on our premium bets. We also lost our 1-unit free bet, although for the year we were profitable. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 124 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Sunday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a featherweight contest between Mads Burnell, who is 8-1, and Mike Santiago, who is 21-9. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Santiago -185, the comeback on Burnell at +145, and of course, that's at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. Currently over at Five Dimes, Santiago -170, the comeback on Burnell at +150. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is two-way action on this fight, and it's kind of a tough one. I mean, Santiago, in my opinion, if you look at his overall record, 21-10, and you look through it, it's okay. It's not that great. But if you look at his recent run, and you got to respect that win streak he was on, I mean, unfortunately for him, before, you know, he made his official UFC debut and just got beat up bad. I mean, against, Zabit. I mean, it was Magomed Shapirov is just a beast, man. And he's a future, obviously, contender at 145 pounds. I mean, a future champion possibly in that weight class. So he just ran across a buzzsaw in his official debut. But on Dana White's contender series against Jericho, he looked really good. And Santiago, I think that's a little bit more of what Santiago usually looks like. I mean, he's one of these guys that's been around the sport for a long time. He's a very well-rounded fighter. He has a wrestling background, but he has some good striking to go along with it. And he has a pretty good ground game. Now, if you look at his resume again, there's an eyesore there because he has 8 losses by submission. But again, I know he got submitted in his last fight by Zabit, but beyond that, his sub-defense actually has gotten a lot better. Well, he's going to need that to be solid here against Burnell because, in my opinion, that's Burnell's best attribute. It's his ground game. It's the ability to get the fight to the floor. It's the ability to kind of scramble around and look for submissions, especially if he gets around your neck. Burnell is very dangerous. Now the feet, Burnell's okay as well. He's developing a stand-up game. He has some decent boxing to go along with it. And he has some power as well. Now, he made his UFC debut against Prezeris up at 155 pounds. So Burnell is dropping to the featherweight division where he belongs actually for this fight. So I think strength-wise, he's actually going to be okay here. And that's might come into play in this matchup as well, because I think overall Santiago is the better mixed martial artist. But if Burnell can kind of bully Santiago a little bit and try to get the fight to the floor and try to work his ground game, I think he's going to have a little bit of success doing so. So that's the tricky part about this fight. I think, again, Santiago probably utilizes his wrestling skill and keeps his fight upright. And I think he outpoints Burnell to the point where he even might get a stoppage along the way on the feet if he's able to maintain it upright for a while. And I think if not, then it's going to be an interesting fight. And Burnell will have a chance to pull off the upset win. So for me, I think it's an intriguing fight. Burnell is probably going to be a lot better than he looked against his debut against Prezeris, and Santiago is definitely going to look better than he did against Zabit in his last fight. So this is an interesting fight, a pretty good one to start off the card, honestly, and I'm looking forward to it. My pick is going to be Santiago because, again, I just think he's a little bit better overall, and I think he's going to kind of outpoint Burnell to a win here.
Both of these guys had very difficult UFC debuts, with Santiago taking on one of the best prospects in the featherweight division in Magomed Sharapov. And Burnell taking on a very physical grappler in Prezeris at lightweight, out of his weight class, basically. So, yeah, Burnell got bullied and Santiago got beat by a clearly superior fighter. So we're going to learn a lot about them when they face each other this time. Personally, I think Burnell is in a decent position. As Nick mentioned, Santiago's had a lot of problems against grapplers in the past. It seems like he'd started to fix him, but, you know, he still had that hole in his game, and Magomed Sharapov was still able to exploit it. Burnell is definitely a ground-based fighter. He has a strong submission game, some good chokes. He can be very aggressive on the canvas from as long as he can get in top position. And that's really what Santiago has to avoid. If Santiago can keep this on the feet, Burnell is a competent striker, but he's not a guy that's going to threaten a finish on the feet. And Santiago definitely does. I mean, he's got some power. He can really pack a punch. Burnell's never scored a knockout in his life. I mean, he's pretty much a submission-based guy. So if Santiago can keep this on the feet, he's going to win. If he can't, I think Burnell has a really good chance to pull this off. I mean, it's not like he got destroyed on the ground by Prezeris. I mean, he just kind of got bullied by a bigger, stronger grappler. And Prezeris was able to get top position. I mean, Burnell was fighting tooth and nail to either get back to his feet or retain guard pretty much for the whole fight until he finally got submitted in the third round. So I think this time around, he can be able to turn the tables a little bit on his opponent, a guy that doesn't want to go to the ground, that he could be shooting in on for takedowns. So I think with Burnell dropping down here, there's a decent chance that he can get inside against Santiago and take him down. So I'm a believer in that. So I'm going to go the other way, and I'm going to pick the Dane, Mads Burnell, to pick up his first UFC victory. Now dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Danielle Taylor, who is 9-2, taking on JJ Aldrich, who is 5-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Taylor, -175, the comeback on Aldridge at +135. Now, this line did have some movement as the overall action came in on Aldridge, and it flipped the line right now over 5 dimes. Aldridge is -130. The comeback on Taylor is +110. So more support coming in Aldridge's way. Now, the glaring thing here is obviously the size discrepancy, where Aldridge is a legit 115-pounder that has 5 inches of height and 7 inches of reach over Taylor. So Taylor's going to be the smaller fighter here for sure. Power-wise, it's going to be interesting because Taylor's a little beast. I mean, even though she's only 5 foot tall and she's shorter than most of her opponents at 115 pounds, I mean, she packs a punch. She's a powerful girl, definitely, and she competes at a high level. So I wouldn't exactly count her out because of her size, and I think that's what a lot of people are – basically doing here more so than anything. Taylor's used to fighting longer girls in her weight class, obviously, because she's always on the shorter end of things. So her movement's pretty good. She has the ability to get inside, close the distance, and counter well with some speed and power to go along with it. So again, I don't think Aldridge is going to be anything she's not used to for Taylor, even with her size. But the thing she has to respect here in Aldridge is actually that she has a pretty good striking game. She has a little bit of power in her own right, and she is an aggressive fighter. She brings it. She comes forward. She pushes a high pace. And on the scorecards, which I'm expecting this fight to go to, I think we're going to see a very competitive split decision type of fight, which is typical in the case of Taylor fights usually. So I think that's what it's going to come down to, because neither lady really likes to take the fight to the ground often. They like to keep the fight upright and then utilize her striking skills. So this is going to be a striker versus striker matchup, and it's going to be Taylor utilizing, again, her speed and her power and her timing, trying to close that gap and get inside. And it's Aldridge going to want to kind of use her length and keep the fight on the outside and just try to outpoint Taylor along the way. So I think both ladies are going to have success doing so. And it's tough. I'm going to go against the grain here. I know, like I said, more people have faith in Aldridge here, and I could see Aldridge maybe coming away with a close competitive decision win. But I really think that Taylor, again, she's used to fighting these longer opponents, and I think it's not going to be any difference here other than the fact that, again, she has to respect a little bit more Aldridge's striking than she did, you know, maybe possibly in her last fight or so. So I think that Taylor's going to surprise some folks and probably come away with another close fought, you know, decision, split decision type of win here. So my pick is Taylor going against the public grain, the underdog here.
And I like Taylor. I just think that she is the better athlete compared to JJ Aldrich. I mean, Aldrich is a little bit more active. I mean, that is pretty much Taylor's biggest weakness at this point, is the fact that she's undersized. She could clearly be fighting in the atom weight division if the UFC had one. And Taylor at times sits back a little too much and lets her opponent dictate the pace. If she does that too much in this fight, I can see Aldrich just outpointing her and landing and throwing more strikes and winning the judges' favor. But the fact that Taylor has way more power than Aldrich, the fact that Taylor has the ability to drop Aldrich if she can connect with something really nasty, is a huge plus. I think Taylor is more athletic. I think she's going to be quicker. I mean, she's clearly going to be at a disadvantage in terms of size. She's getting up 7 inches in reach, 5 inches in height, but it might not matter. I mean, Taylor has faced long opponents like that before. I mean, her last opponent, Jessica Penne, she won a decision against. And then before that, she faced an active striker in Seohi Ham, the nickname of Hamderlei Silva for how crazy aggressive she is. And Taylor won a decision against her. So I have to give Taylor some props. She's won a lot more fights against opponents that I didn't think she'd be able to beat. And this is another type of matchup where as long as she doesn't just sit back and let JJ Aldrich dictate the fight, then I think Taylor has a really good chance of pulling this out. As long as she can step in, connect with some power, and avoid getting hit, I mean, she can force JJ Aldrich to hit air. And I think that Taylor is a good enough fighter that even though she's giving up some size, she should be able to make up for it with the athleticism and explosiveness and power. So I'm going to side with Danielle Taylor here. Now moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Kyung-ho Kang, who is 13-7 with one no contest, and he's taking on Guido Canetti, who is 7-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Kang -300, the comeback in Canetti at +220. Right now, looking over five dimes, is Kang -335, the comeback in Canetti at +275. So a little bit more action coming in Kang's way. There's some parlays being hit over five dimes as well with Kang in him. I guess people don't care that Kang was out for a while. I mean, he's been out for since 2014, actually. I mean, he had military duties to fulfill in Korea, so that's why he wasn't hurt. I mean, anything crazy like that. So honestly, physically, he's got to be in decent shape. I'm sure he did a lot of mixed martial arts training along the way as well. I know that it's not the same as actually getting in the cage and competing in that time off, but I don't expect too much of a decline in Kang or, you know, too much rust, as they say. Now, Canetti's been out. I mean, USADA popped him, and he's been out for a couple years as well. So I'm wondering how he's going to be. He's 38 years old now as well. Now, of course, both these guys are talented. They both deserve to be, you know, in the bantamweight division competing here. Canetti, I'm not sure. I think this is almost a must-win situation for him here over Kang, and it's not as much for Kang, I think, here. So Canetti, this could be his last fight if he loses, and I think he will, actually, the way he matches up with Kang. I think basically here, Canetti's best shot will be to keep the fight upright and possibly try to land a big punch and, you know, rock Kang and try to get him out of there. Outside of that, I know Canetti has some grappling, and it's not bad. I mean, he's put together fairly well for an MMA fighter. I mean, he's got a complete game. It's just not anything too special, though, in Canetti's game. It's not like he's going to totally dominate everybody in the bantamweight division at 135 pounds, or he's not going to wrestle everybody at 135 pounds, but he has solid striking. He does have some solid grappling to go along with it. But I think the grappling aspect of this fight for Canetti is going to be where his downfall is. I think Kang is eventually going to get this fight to the mat. And when he does, I expect him to take Canetti's back and just make life miserable for him and possibly finish him on the ground. So I think that's where the difference lies here with Kang. He does have some reach and he does have some okay striking on the feet. But in my opinion, that's not where you want to go here with Canetti. You want to try to close a distance, you know, maybe utilize the clinch a little bit, get a takedown, get his back and beat him on the ground. And I think that's what Kang's going to do. So before he had the time off, Kang, in my opinion, was one of the, I guess, guys to watch at 135 pounds moving up the ladder. I mean, the guy has some talent, and he was only getting better fight by fight. So it's kind of a shame he had that time off, but I'm glad he's back, and I'm expecting some big things from him still moving forward. So the pick is Kang. I think he's, you know, going to come through here and be impressive with his return.
Yeah, Kang, when he left to go do his military service, he, in my opinion, was a top 15 bantamweight in the world. I mean, he was really performing well. He had just picked up a quality win by handing Tanaka his first MMA loss. So, I mean, he pulled off a big upset in that fight. And I really thought that he was performing at a very high level. He's a strong grappler, very big and physical for the bantamweight division with competent striking. I mean, if you go back and watch that Kang Tanaka fight, I mean, that is one of my favorite underrated fights ever in terms of ground scrambles. I mean, it was just amazing. So if he can come back and be at that level or even close to that level, I don't think Canetti has a chance. I mean, Canetti is a solid veteran out of Argentina, but I mean, that's about as far as it goes. He's pretty old for the bantamweight division. He doesn't have a very good chin. I mean, he has competent striking, but he's not elite. He has decent wrestling, but he's not elite. I mean, he's pretty much just pretty good at everything, but not great at anything. And especially at 38 years old in the bantamweight division, I mean, this is almost like the picture perfect type of opponent that the UFC wanted to throw against Kang to see where his skills are at. I mean, if Kang is back to the level he was, then he should just slice through Kennedy like butter. If he's rusty, you know, Kennedy could give him some fits. I think this is solid matchmaking. I think it'll be very interesting to have Kang back. And we've already seen, you know, a fighter come back from Korean military service and perform well with the Korean Zombie knocking out Bermudez. So I think Kang becomes another, the second fighter to do that, and I think that he performs very well. I wouldn't be shocked if he picks up a submission victory on Sunday night. So my pick is going to be Kyung Ho Kang. Now, sticking with the bantamweight division, we have a women's contest between Talita Bernardo, who is 5-2, taking on Irene Aldana, who is 7-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Aldana -270, the comeback on Bernardo at +190. Looking over five times right now, it's -230 for Aldana. The comeback on Bernardo still at +190. So line margins have tightened up, and there is two action in this fight. Nothing crazy going on yet. I think we will see some movement eventually on this fight, though. And it's a tough one. I mean, Aldana has had the hype coming into the UFC, you know, because she was the one that a lot of people expected some huge things out of. I mean, she had the hype coming over from Invicta. A lot of people believe she was a legit, you know, future title contender at 135 pounds. She's only getting better. And she basically is a striking based fighter that has put together a complete game. She's getting better with her wrestling skills offensively. Defensively, that's kind of where she lacks though a little bit. She needs to continue to work on her takedown defense. And then her submission game's okay, but she still needs a little bit of work in that area as well. So Aldana needs to keep this fight upright, especially against Bernardo, because Bernardo's strength is definitely her ground game. She's a jiu-jitsu specialist, a BJJ black belt. I mean, and she's pretty slick when she's on the ground. So this is a striker versus grappler matchup, in my opinion. And that's what's going to make it intriguing. So if Aldana is able to keep the fight upright and utilizes her strength in the striking game, she's going to win this fight. She probably even has a shot to finish Bernardo as the fight progresses a little bit if she's able to keep it upright for that long. But the problem here is Bernardo might need one takedown, two takedowns, and she can have her way with Aldana on the floor. I mean, Bernardo, if you look at her fight against Renault, I mean, she gassed a little bit. She did take that fight on short notice, and I think a lot of people might not have been too impressed by her, but those takedowns that she got and her ability to shoot in with her timing on that double leg she has, it's a little sneaky, and it basically I don't want to say unpredictable, but a little surprising. I mean, how quick she gets in on that double leg and how effective her takedowns can be. So Aldana has some decent takedown defense, but it's definitely going to be tested here against Bernardo. I mean, with that timing and her ability to get some trip takedowns as well, I think Bernardo probably will get this fight to the ground. And once she does, she's either going to maintain top position or she's going to start looking for that sub. And if she looks for that sub, I think she eventually gets it. So in my opinion, it's a dog or pass situation. I think the dog does pull off the upset win here, and it's all because of the ground game. Her cardio should be a little bit better, but I do give her some credit. Even though she was tired and exhausted her last fight, she was still fighting. I mean, she didn't give up even, you know, late in that fight. She was still trying to go for takedowns and trying to utilize her game. So I think Bernardo should show up a little bit better here. And although Aldana needs a win desperately, she's been, you know, in some battles in the UFC thus far, and she's been on the wrong end of the stick, but I think she's going to suffer another loss here to the hands of Bernardo. So interesting matchmaking by the UFC here, but I think the grappler is actually going to beat the striker in this matchup. So my pick is Bernardo.
And I have to agree, Bernardo, while she's not as well-rounded as other fighters in the women's bantamweight division, what she does have is a strong ground game and one of the better shots in the division. Granted, we've only really seen a brief taste on a short-notice fight where she gassed and got finished. But even from that fight, I was impressed with at least that part of her game. Her stand-up is not good. She's slow. She doesn't pack any heat whatsoever in her strikes. There is nothing that she does on the feet that is going to make her opponent be concerned about standing and training with her, especially somebody like Aldana that, you know, is able to finish people on the feet if she's able to connect solidly. So Bernardo is going to have to be careful during stand-up exchanges. I mean, Aldana is probably a more dangerous striker than Renault. Renault is a more active, I would say a more conditioned striker, but Aldana can hit a little bit harder. So, Bernardo definitely needs to be cautious in that department, but she just has to bide her time until Aldana leaves an opening because, Bernardo is a strong grappler and has, like I said, a great shot. And if she can duck under a heavy strike, then I think Aldana is going to be in trouble. I mean, if you go back and watch Aldana fight Tanya Evinger, I mean, she just got taken down over and over and over again. And Evinger just beat the hell out of her until they finally stopped the fight. I think Bernardo can do the same thing. She has decent ground and pound and a pretty strong grappling game. So I think this is a great opportunity for Bernardo to get that grappling going. I expect that she'll be able, especially with a full training camp, that she's going to have conditioning not be as much of an issue this time around. And I expect that she'll be able to at least win 2 out of the 3 rounds by getting takedowns in top position. It's just all about not gassing and not getting lit up too much on the feet while waiting for opportunities to get to the floor, because Aldana is dangerous on the feet. Aldana's gone 0-2 in the UFC so far, but I would say that she looked improved in her last fight against Chookagian, where she lost a split decision compared to, you know, she got soundedly beat by Leslie Smith in her debut. So Aldana still is somebody that you can't sleep on, and if Bernardo thinks she can go out and just trade with her for a little bit, she could be, you know, put to sleep quickly. So I'm picking Bernardo, but that's based on her using her grappling and not gassing. So I'm a little concerned about that because we haven't seen her conditioning, but I do think that Bernardo can pull this off. So she's going to be my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the Facebook prelims, we have Kalindra Faria, who is 18-6-1, taking on Jessica Ai, who is 11-6 with 1 no contest. And this is in the women's flyweight division. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I have an -125 Faria at -115, and right now looking over 5 dimes, it's -115 Faria is -105. So line margins have tightened up, and there was a little bit more action coming in earlier on Faria, but now we're seeing some action back on Ai. So it is about a pick 'em with a slight lean towards Ai, and I think it's about right. So this is an intriguing fight. I mean, if you look at Ai, she's lost 4 fights in a row. You know, and unfortunately for her, it's been against great competition. So it's not like she's losing to any bums. I mean, if you look at again, you can say what you want about Betch Gohea, but outside of Betch, I mean, McMahon lost, Pena lost, Tate lost, and Jessica Ai was competitive in most of those fights. So I think she's better than most people actually give her credit for. And that losing streak's a little bit unfair for her. And I'm glad the UFC kept her around because she is definitely better than that. And actually at 125 pounds where she belongs, I think she's going to actually have a chance to kind of rejuvenate her career and prove, you know, to everybody out there that she is one of the elite fighters at 125 pounds. Because before she came into the UFC, she was one of the world's best at 125 pounds. So it's good to see the UFC bring in the flyweight weight class for these ladies. And we're going to see some good fights along the way, I think. I mean, Faria is another one, I think, that at 125 pounds is going to do well. I think she's, unfortunately for her in her debut, you know, she just got beat, and it was the ground game that got her beat, honestly, more than anything else. So she got overwhelmed, I think, on the ground. Ai is obviously not that type of fighter. She's not going to be consistently looking for takedowns, although I wouldn't be surprised if Ai takes her down a time or two, because I think her coaching and her game plan is going to be pretty smart. And so I would expect some, I guess, different looks from Jessica Ai, but really this is a striker versus striker matchup. Both these ladies like to bang. Both these ladies, you know, have a little bit of power in their punches as well. And they're pretty accurate with their striking in most cases. And I think we're going to see a firefight on the feet, and we'll see some takedowns being, you know, thrown back and forth, because Faria is another lady that likes to get the fight to the ground from time to time. And once she's on top, she has some pretty good ground and pound, and she could do some damage. So I think she'll be able to keep it upright. And if she does, Jessica Ai will be able to outpoint Faria on her way to a decision win. Now, it should be competitive. And one problem I have with Jessica Ai is at times she doesn't put her foot on the gas enough. I mean, she has to stay active. She has to stay busy. I mean, that's what let Pachkoheya back in that fight. It was a controversial split decision loss for Jessica in her last fight, but I think if she would have put on her foot on the gas or kept it on the gas a little bit more, she probably would have won that fight clear on the judges' scorecard. So it's been some tough luck for Ai lately, but I think she, you know, bounces back here in her rightful weight class, and, you know, she has an impressive performance. So Jessica Ai is my pick in what should be a pretty exciting competitive fight.
And I have to agree. Jessica Ai is a flawed fighter, but I think she was more of a flawed fighter in the bantamweight division. At flyweight, I mean, she was dominant. I mean, and she had victories over some very quality competition. So I think now that she is back where she belongs in the women's flyweight division, I think that she can make some things happen. I mean, you go back and watch, she had quality victories over, you know, Zoila Frosto, Karina Dam, and then gets to the UFC and beats Sarah Kaufman in her debut. And that, I did think she won that fight. And then also had a quality win over Leslie Smith. So she's clearly, been having trouble dealing with some of the bigger, stronger fighters in the bantamweight division since, but I think this can rejuvenate her dropping down to the flyweight division. My one concern is that she has seemed a bit chinny on the, in terms of absorbing strikes, and that was at bantamweight. And then by cutting more weight, that could be amplified. So if she gets into extended stand-up exchanges with Faria and she eats some big shots, she could get in trouble. That being said, I think Ai has put in some time to focus on other parts of her game. I think her ground game is actually not that bad. I know that her ground game got exposed against the likes of Miesha Tate, and Alexis Davis had some good things happened in that fight. Sarah McMahon clearly got a bunch of takedowns, and even Juliana Pena at times. But I mean, there were also times where Jessica Ai had a top position against Juliana Pena. If she can kind of revert back and bring back some of that part of her game, I think that Faria is potentially able to be exposed on the canvas. I mean, she clearly got dominated in her UFC debut, Faria did, on the ground. And I think Jessica Ai is capable of out-grappling her as well. I mean, I'm not that impressed with Faria's ground game. She's not that big of a flyweight. She's lost to a lot of strawweights, a lot of current UFC strawweights. So I think Ai can win it on the ground. I think Ai can win it on the feet, but by hanging around on the feet a lot, she could be playing with fire, just with the chin, with the tendency to be inactive. I don't know if she'll be inspired by dropping down to the flyweight division or not, but I think if she can mix it up, she's going to be in good shape, because that's when Jessica Ai was at her best. Yeah, she has been more of a striker than a grappler throughout her career, but I mean, the big victories of her career were like when she took on Frosto in Bellator and picked up an arm triangle choke, a standing arm triangle choke after rocking her on the feet. So I think I can bring back the fire a little bit, and I think that she can turn it around a little bit in the feather, the flyweight division. So I'm going to pick Jessica Ai. Now moving on to the preliminary card on Fox Sports 1, we have a welterweight contest between Thiago Alves, who is 26-11, and Zach Cummings, who is 21-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Cummings -180 to come back on Alves at +140. And right now, looking over Five Dimes, it is currently Cummings -210 to come back on Alves is at +175. So a little bit more action coming Cummings' way. I think we're all thinking along the same lines. I mean, I know Alves, you know, was able to bounce back and get a win upon his return to welterweight, which was good to see, because, you know, Alves has been one of the best welterweights, I mean, historically in the UFC. And when he was in his prime, especially making that run towards title shots against GSP or whatnot, he was, I mean, he was the man outside of the top, you know, two or three guys in the division. Alves was right there. So he's been at the highest level for the longest time. So it's hard to see guys like that drop off. But unfortunately for Alves, again, even despite, you know, his recent win over Cote, he has had a decline. And I mean, he's 34 years old, but in MMA years, he's way beyond that. Now, Cummings, on the other hand, he's 33 years old. He's been around the sport for a long time as well, but not yet. He's not quite as battle tested or has worn out, I think, MMA wise as Alves is, as far as the longevity of his career. I think he's younger MMA years, if that makes any sense, than Alves would be, even though they're close to the same age. So I think Cummings is a little bit fresher than Alves. And I think overall, Cummings has made more improvements to his game as his career progressed. I mean, he's been pretty impressive. I mean, even his striking, he's more well known, Cummings is, for his grappling ability, for getting the fight to the floor, for submission game. He has underrated wrestling, but his striking is actually to the point where he can outstrike a lot of these welterweights right now on a feet as well. So Cummings is a very complete fighter. I think if this fight stays upright, it'll be a competitive battle back and forth. Obviously, Alves' striking is his best attribute, so Alves will hang in there, I'm sure. But I just trust Cummings' chin and his toughness and his durability a little bit more, even on the feet. But I think Cummings is smart enough where if he gets the opportunity to get Alves' back or take him down or any type of scrambling situation on the ground, he will take advantage of that. And Alves is not the easiest guy to take down, but of course, we have seen that be his kryptonite in the past. And I think Cummings is smart enough and slick enough to possibly be able to do that as well. So, in my opinion, it's Cummings' fight to win or lose. Unfortunately for Alves, I just think, again, he's kind of past that point that he's not going to show, you know, his best days are definitely behind him. And I think that Cummings is going to still climb that ladder a little bit and show us what he's got. So this is going to be a big win for Cummings over a solid, respectable vet like Alves. And I think he's going to be impressive in doing so. So my pick is Cummings to win, possibly by finish, but I'll give Alves the benefit of the doubt. I think it probably is a hard-fought decision win for Cummings.
I completely agree. I mean, Thiago Alves' best days are behind him. I mean, yeah, at one point, this guy was one of the most feared strikers in the world, but that was a long time ago. He's not that same fighter anymore. And personally, I just don't think that he's at that same level where he can get the job done against the best people in the world. So Thiago Alves 2018 is just a shell of the fighter, in my opinion, of Thiago Alves that fought GSP at UFC 100. So, yeah, Thiago Alves picked up a win over Cote in his last fight, but you gotta remember, you know, Patrick Cote has been around forever too. So I think at this point, Alves in this fight is taking on somebody that still could improve, Cummings is still a guy that it has not peaked, in my opinion, in terms of his career, while Alves clearly has. So I just think this is a bad matchup for Alves. I mean, Cummings is a very big, physical, strong, welterweight. Alves does have like a technical striking edge, but I don't think he's as durable as he used to be. So Cummings does have some pop. He could put him away on the feet. And Cummings' biggest strength is his physicality and grappling. And Alves could be exposed there as well. So I just think this is a bad matchup for Thiago Alves at this point in his career. And Zach Cummings is fighting at a pretty high level right now. And while maybe the Thiago Alves of 4 or 5 years ago beats Zach Cummings today, I don't think the current Thiago Alves will. So my pick is going to be Zach Cummings. I think that he wins relatively convincingly. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Matt Frevola, who is 6-0, taking on Marco Polo Reyes, who is 8-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Frevola -230, the comeback on Reyes at +170. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it is actually Frevola at -230, the comeback on Reyes at +190. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming in this fight. I mean, Reyes, we all know what he's about. I mean, the guy has some power. If you look at his record, again, not that great, not that impressive, but one thing's for sure, the guy definitely has improved since his time on The Ultimate Fighter, and he packs enough of a punch that you have to respect his striking ability. So I know he's coming off of a pretty tough, you know, loss. James Vick looked great in that fight against Reyes in his last fight. I mean, it was just Vick is really in his groove right now. So that's kind of a respectable loss for Reyes. It's not really the way it happened, I guess, because that was a pretty, you know, nasty knockout or whatever loss that he had. But that being said, Rice can deliver some of that same punishment usually against his opponents. I'm not so sure if he's going to be able to do that with Frivola, though. Frivola is definitely a tough, gritty fighter. He's from Dana White's Contender Series as well. But beyond that, I mean, the guy has a pretty respectable record outside of the UFC. The guy's a grinder. He has a wrestling background. He's got some pretty decent stand-up as well. He's got some power on his feet. So this is going to be a fun fight. I mean, you basically have a striker versus striker, even though Frivola is a little bit beyond that striker, again, with his background. And, you know, I think he's got a better ground game for sure. So that he trumps him there, but this is going to be fun because these guys are going to like to stand and bang. And again, it should be, you know, who makes the first mistake is going to probably suffer the defeat here. But I do think Frivola, I guess I'm making it sound closer than it appears. I do like Frivola in his fight. I think he can probably avoid that big bomb from Reyes. And as the fight progresses, I think Frivola is going to be able to find his spots, even if it's on the ground, and probably finish the job. So my pick is Frivola. I think he's going to look impressive, man. I tell you what, if you look closer again at his background, even before he came into the UFC, you can see some really good spots in his game, and you can see the improvement fight by fight slowly start to come. So I think Frivola, he's only going to get better from here. So this is a solid test, and I'm glad the UFC matched him this way, because Reyes is definitely a dangerous opponent on the feet, but Frivola, I think, prevails here. So the pick is Frivola to win.
And I completely agree. I think, you know, Frivola is a guy with a lot of talent. He clearly showed that he has power in that Tuesday Night Contender Series fight when he was able to drop his opponent repeatedly in the first round, and then he cracked him a little bit in the second round. He's not that technical of a striker. He's more of a guy that relies on just that one big shot or that one big, you know, 1-2 combination. He doesn't really set up strikes that well. He doesn't, throw in combination that well. Clearly he has an ability to change a fight with one strike, which is important. And what he also has is some pretty solid wrestling. I mean, this kid can repeatedly shoot in for takedowns, get top position. He can ride out rounds. He can grapple. He can, advance positions. What we saw in that Contender Series fight was him starting out strong on the feet with, dropping his opponent. And then, when his opponent started to utilize their technical striking advantages, he relied on his ground game and shot in for takedowns, put his opponent on their back, and was able to get an arm triangle submission. So I think against Reyes, Frivola is going to be able to connect early, but if he doesn't put Reyes away, then I can see Reyes adjusting a little bit to Frivola's stand-up, but then I see Frivola just mixing it up and going to the ground. So the fact that he's just the more well-rounded guy here with that is dangerous both standing and on the ground, I like Frivola a lot. Reyes is only going to win if Frivola can't land a takedown and then isn't able to land that big shot either on the feet. And I just think Frivola can do both. So my pick is going to be Frivola. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have James Krause, who is 24-8, taking on Alex White, who is 12-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Krause -230, the comeback on White at +170. To my surprise, the early action did come in on White, and it dropped the line. Right now, looking at five dimes, it's Krause -155, the comeback +135. To my surprise, what I'm saying is I thought that most of the bettors out there would actually favor Krause, or the public hype would be a little bit more so on Krause. He's a popular fighter. I think he's been, I don't know, he's earned a little bit more respect from the fan base and the betting community overall than White has, but not this time. I think the early action coming in on White at +170, I take my hat off. I think that's the right way to go. It's probably a dog or pass situation at that time. Now at -155 for Krause, it gets interesting because I do think Krause should have the slight advantage in this fight. I mean, White's a pretty complete fighter. I mean, since he's moved up to 155 pounds, I think he's made the right move. It looks like he's hasn't missed a beat, really. I mean, he has a really impressive win he's coming off of over Mitch Clark. That was, you know, a good knockout to watch. And Krause, of course, has been – overall, he's been on a roll for some time now. I mean, Krause is one of those guys that I think has improved drastically, I mean, you know, throughout his career. I know he's, you know, he has some success, obviously, in the Ultimate Fighter House as well. And, you know, he's kind of got I don't know. I don't want to say a chip on his shoulder, but he's kind of been fighting that way for some time now, a little bit too. And it's been working out for him well because he's faced top notch competition and he's performed well to the point where his wrestling, I think, has improved the most offensively. I mean, he's been able to get fighters to the ground and utilize his wrestling, get top position and, you know, outpoint fights that way. Now his stand up skill is also pretty fun to watch. I mean, he crosses a little bit unorthodox. He mixes in his kicking game well. So I think this fight's going to take place in all areas. I think it's going to be competitive on the feet. I think White actually has better hands here and he could be a bigger threat on the feet, you know, standing with his boxing, with his knockout power. But Kraus does have a more versed arsenal. He can throw at White a little bit with his kicks, with his unorthodox striking ability as well. Now, I think Kraus will probably earn top position throughout the bout a little bit more than White will. So I think that's probably going to be enough with, you know, with his unorthodox striking skills, like I said, to probably give him a slight advantage and win on the scorecards here. I don't think these guys can finish each other, even though they have that kind of finishing ability from time to time. I think what we see here, it plays out to be a close competitive decision win for Kraus. So it should be competitive. It should be a fun fight. And again, I take my hat off to you guys that got that plus 170. But right now I'm slightly leaning towards Kraus. I just think he's made the bigger improvements throughout his career from what I've seen thus far than White has. White's improving and he's looking good and he's getting some confidence, but I think Kraus still has a slight edge here.
At this point, James Kraus is still just the better fighter. I mean, I was surprised that he was on the Ultimate Fighter to begin with when the recent season happened. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. I mean, he was on a 2-fight winning streak in the UFC and then he went on an appearance of the Ultimate Fighter for like a redemption type thing. I don't know. It was just weird. And I think he proved himself by being a semifinalist on the show and then winning against the other semifinalist with Galicio. I thought Kraus is just a solid overall guy and he's well-rounded. I mean, he has decent striking and an above average ground game. So he's the type of fighter that I really believe in. And against Alex White, White is more of a prototypical pressure boxer. I mean, he wants to move forward. He wants to get in your face. He wants to throw some strikes. But, I mean, his defense is suspect. And personally, I think he does have some issues as well with technical strikers. And I think James Kraus, if he can use a good jab, then White could, you know, really take some damage. You saw that in White's loss, to Tony Martin, where, you know, he clearly was not, able to deal with the jab, but I mean, he was able to get inside and land other strikes. So I think what happens in this fight is Alex White pushes forward. He eats a lot of jabs. He eats a lot of kicks and at some point, I think this fight goes to the ground and James Kraus is the better ground fighter as well. So Kraus is just the more well-rounded guy here and he should be able to impose his will on White. So James Kraus is going to be my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Darren Elkins, who is 24-5, taking on Michael Johnson, who is 18-12, and this is in the featherweight division. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Johnson minus 165, the comeback on Elkins at plus 125. Right now, looking over Five Dimes, it is currently Johnson at minus 150, the comeback on Elkins at plus 130. So line margins have tightened up again. Two action is coming in this fight. Early action went a little bit more towards Johnson. Now we're starting to see some action back on Elkins. And again, two-way action because it's an intriguing fight. I mean, Johnson dropping down to 145 pounds for the first time in the UFC, it's interesting, man. I mean, to me, I think at this point, I'm curious to see if he can actually make it because Johnson's not exactly a small lightweight. So, I mean, that weight cut is definitely going to be a big factor in this fight. If he could do it right and he stays healthy and he can bring that power and cardio, I mean, not that he had, you know, endless cardio at 155 pounds, but I think if his cardio can hold for him to go three rounds here against Elkins, he's going to have some success because he might not need to go three rounds if that's the, you know, the probability with him because he has such a good knockout power that I think he torches Elkins on the feet, obviously. I mean, honestly, even if Elkins has improved the way he has, even in a stand-up realm, I mean, he's no match for Johnson, at least the Johnson that was fighting 155 pounds. So I think what we see here is Johnson trying to keep this fight upright, trying to keep the space, and then dropping, you know, some bombs along the way. And I think he probably has success doing so. Elkins, I got a ton of respect for him. He's on quite a win streak. He's beaten a lot of good fighters, and I'm glad, man. He's the type of fighter that puts the work in. He's not a trash talker. He just, you know, he works hard, and his, you know, work ethic has shown. I mean, he's getting better. He's getting more confidence, and he's a tough out. He's a grinder. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Elkins is able to, you know, come away with a win here and just grinds Johnson out the way he does a lot of other people, or even possibly finishes Johnson on the ground along the way. Because Elkins has shown that kind of improvement. But I mean, my head says that Johnson probably will handle that weight cut pretty good. And if he does, and he can keep this fight upright, he should be able to do what he does best. And that's probably finish Elkins on the feet, or at least outpoint him enough to, you know, earn a clear type of decision win over him. So I'm going to pick Johnson. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for the weight cut. And I think if he does look good and, you know, he can make that cut properly, he will have some success at 145 pounds. So looking forward to seeing how this plays out, but my pick is going to be Johnson.
And I'm going to come in the other way. I mean, Michael Johnson, yeah, he is a talented lightweight with extremely high quality wins. I mean, there is no doubt about that. Absolutely none. The problem is he has taken a lot of damage recently. I mean, he got the crap kicked out of him in those last two rounds against Khabib. I mean, he got lit up in his performance against Justin Gaethje. I mean, that just took, that's the type of fight that takes years off of both fighters' lives. And clearly, I just don't think that he is good enough at this point, and durable enough to hang with somebody that pushes such a high tempo like Darren Elkins. I mean, Elkins is a guy that feasts on fighters that slow down. And Michael Johnson is the fighter that slows down. I mean, if he slows down at the lightweight division, he is definitely going to be slowing down against Darren Elkins. So I'm clearly concerned about that. And Michael Johnson also has had issues against ground fighters. I mean, repeatedly he had issues. Miles Jury repeatedly got him down. Jonathan Brookins beat him on the Ultimate Fighter on the ground. So personally, I just don't think Johnson has enough left in the tank to keep Darren Elkins off of him for three straight rounds. I just think he's going to slow down. Elkins is eventually going to get takedowns and wear him out and win a decision. Johnson's probably going to start strong, but unless he finishes Elkins in the first minute or two, I think Elkins just rides this one out. So Darren Elkins is my pick. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have Kamaru Usman, who is 11-1, taking on Emil Meek, who is 9-2-1 with one no contest in the welterweight division. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Open it. Usman minus 705, the comeback on Meek at plus 435. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Usman minus 600, the comeback on Meek plus 450. So it looks like the favorite dropped a little bit, but it really didn't. The line margins have tightened up, and there's actually an increase on the dog price at plus 450. So there is two-way action on this fight, despite the crazy high price for Usman in this matchup against Meek. It should be a good fight. I mean, Meek is not exactly a can, so I think the price is overinflated to say the least, but Usman has just been a beast lately. I mean, he's definitely looking like a true contender at, you know, 170 pounds. I mean, in the making for sure. He's one of the most dominant grapplers in the sport. He's got nasty ground and pound. He's got good finishing ability. He's proven now that he wants to, you know, to show that he can beat people up on the feet as well and get the knockout. I don't necessarily agree that's a way to go, especially in this fight against Meek. But I mean, Usman is definitely a type of grinder, a type of dominant grappler, finisher that can, you know, finish fights on the ground as well. That is improving his overall game by adding a little bit of stand up to his arsenal as well. So that's good because he's going to need it, I think, as he, you know, keeps on climbing towards that title shot. So he should have a huge advantage doing what he does best in this fight over Meek. Now, Meek, typically speaking, his takedown defense is solid, but against somebody like Usman, it's not going to last. That's the problem. That's why Usman is such a big favorite here. I mean, Meek is a pretty good fighter. Even on the ground, he's not bad. It's just that I don't think he's up to this level as far as, you know, stuffing those takedowns. And Usman should be able to dominate and get the fight to the ground. And once he does, have his way with him. Now, if Meek is able to keep the fight standing, I think that's where he's going to do his best work. I think Meek is going to have success against Usman, and Meek probably pulls off the upset if that's the case. Now, you know, Meek's not going to get that kind of respect from the bettors, obviously. And, you know, I think if he pulls off this upset, obviously he will from that point on. But it's just one of those situations that if he can do what he does and keep this fight upright, he might get it. So I think that he deserves a little bit more respect than we're giving him here, all of us. But it's hard to argue against Usman as well at this point. So, I mean, Usman's focused. He's looking for that title shot soon. And I think he takes one step closer with his win over Meek. So the pick is Usman. I mean, there's not really much more to say about this. He should be able to get the takedowns and win this fight.
Yeah, I'm with Nick here. There's not a lot to say about this fight. Kamaru Usman is, in my opinion, a future champion if he can focus on his strengths. Yeah, his stand-up looked better in his last fight against Moraes, but that's against Sergio Moraes. I mean, that's a guy that's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, elite Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu fighter. He's not an elite striker. I mean, he had a little bit of pop in his hands, but that's not somebody... I mean, that's somebody that he should feel comfortable standing with. But if he's walking around saying, I'm a problem after knocking out Sergio Moraes and thinking that he can stand and trade with anybody, I think that he's going to be in for a big surprise. So hopefully Usman goes back to his roots, because on the ground, I mean, there is nobody with better wrestling in the welterweight division than him right now. I mean, he takes everybody down. He might have the best wrestler for his weight class of anybody in the UFC. I mean, it's that good. If he can do that against Meek, then he should have a dominant one-sided victory. If he screws around on the feet, then Meek will have a chance. So I'm concerned about that. Clearly, on the feet, he should still be able to hold his own, but why play with fire? I mean, Usman should win this fight handily if he just puts Meek on his back and beats him up for three straight rounds, potentially gets a stoppage along the way. So my pick is going to be Kamaru Usman. I just hope that he goes back to his roots instead of screwing around on the feet. Now, dropping down to the women's flyweight division, we have Paige VanZant, who is 7-3, taking on Jessica Rose Clark, who is 8-4 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened VanZant -175 to come back on Rose Clark at +135. To my surprise, everybody came in on Rose Clark. I'm saying that because VanZant obviously has a popularity. I mean, and that is one big factor here in this line for me in my opener, at least. I mean, people like to bet VanZant. There's no doubt about that. But I think people, the bettors out there are wise, and they understand, you know, matchups are matchups. Take the hype out the window. So I think the early action came in on Clark. It was fair. Again, it's another spot where I think the early action was okay and not bad, because I think this is going to be a very competitive fight. Of course, VanZant moving up from 115 pounds to make her official UFC flyweight debut. So that's going to be interesting. And Rose Clark, of course, you know, I think she's a very, you know, solid flyweight in her own right. She's a strong girl, and I think that's going to be interesting here as well. So can VanZant deal with, you know, the toughness and the, I guess, the pressure and the power that Clark can bring to the table? I think Clark on the feet has the edge over VanZant. I think VanZant, you know, might be a little bit faster, but I think Clark could be a little bit more effective, more powerful on the feet as well. I think what it's going to come down to is which lady can get top position on the ground as well. VanZant might have the overall grappling edge. I mean, I think she's a little bit slicker with her jiu-jitsu game. She's a little bit slicker in her transitions and her reversals. I think Clark has a little bit better top control, and she could deliver a little bit more punishment on the ground with her ground and pound as well. So, and I do think both are capable of getting top position at a certain point throughout the fight. So if it hits the ground and it plays out on the ground long enough, I think VanZant's going to come away with a win. If Clark is able to keep the fight upright and is able to utilize her striking more so, or get some takedowns along the way, I think she's going to win. So to me, this is a pick'em type of fight. And right now, I don't even know if I kind of mentioned the line, but it's Clark -125. The comeback on VanZant is +105. So another case where the line did flip. And so it's currently with Clark as a slight favorite. And I actually agree with that a little bit. Again, I thought the public would actually take VanZant's lineup a little bit higher. So that's not the case here. I do respect the early action, as I said, coming in on Clark. And I think if she's able to keep the fight upright, she wins. So this is interesting. And I'm surprised actually that the UFC matched this fight, because I thought VanZant might get maybe a higher, more respectable named opponent. I mean, not that Clark isn't worthy of this fight, because I think she could win it, obviously. But I think a win over Clark for VanZant doesn't do that much. but it will do a lot for Clark getting a win over Van Zandt. So it's kind of a win-win situation for Clark in this spot. And I'm going to side her with her slightly to get the win here. I do think it's going to be competitive. It might be a possible split decision type of fight, but you know, I want to see what Van Zandt brings to the table at 125 pounds. And I know what Rose Clark's about. So I'm going to go with her.
Yeah. Rose Clark, I wasn't that impressed by her in her UFC debut against Rawlings. I mean, that's somebody that Van Zandt knocked out on the feet, and, you know, she was able to win a decision, but it wasn't that great of a decision. So this time around against Van Zandt, I mean, clearly Rose Clark wants to stand and trade. And Van Zandt, I'm not sure what she wants to do. I mean, she's had her most success in the UFC by just pushing an extremely high tempo and wearing her opponents out. But against, you know, Jessica Rose Clark, maybe she won't be able to do that. She might not be able to bully her around because, you know, now they're in the flyweight division. They're 10 pounds heavier. So that is something to consider. I will say that Paige VanZant did say that she was having issues with, you know, the weight cuts. She was really taking a big toll on her body, and maybe this is going to be kind of a fresh start for her. But the one problem that she's always had in her career is she's not the most technical fighter. She's had issues throughout her career. Just whenever she faced somebody that was a better striker, she got outstruck for the most part. When she faced a better grappler, she gets out grappled. So if she's going to be fighting Jessica Rose Clark and she turns this into a stand-up contest, I don't think she wins it. I think, you know, she just clearly gets outstruck. If she's able to drag Clark to the ground and turn this into a bit of a grappling contest, then I think she's going to be in a decent position. It's just all about how Paige is able to perform. And she does have the ability to push that high tempo and wear an opponent out. I mean, she has some quality victories. I mean, Felice Herrig is actually a quality victory right now. Herrig's basically a top 10 women's strawweight, and Paige VanZant, you know, ate her up in the rounds 2 and 3 by just weathering that early storm and then just taking her out as she slowed down. So if VanZant pushes the high enough tempo, then maybe she's got a shot here. I mean, she's not the most technical, but she's been putting in a lot of time, and it seems like she's, you know, still committed to the sport. She's working hard, and I think that she does have the ability to make something happen here. So my pick's going to be Paige VanZant. Now, I'm not crazy confident about it, especially just because technically she's not that sound, but she is capable and she is determined. And I think if she can use that kind of Energizer Bunny strategy against Clark, she might be able to wear her down and win a decision. So I am sticking with Paige. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have Uriah Hall, who is 14-8, taking on Vitor Belfort, who is 26-13 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Hall -245, the comeback on Belfort at +175. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Hall -300. The comeback on Belfort is at +250. So a little bit more action coming in recently towards Hall. Tough one, man, because, you know, obviously Hall has been a bit chinny as of late as well. I mean, he's not exactly a young buck at age 33, and he's, I mean, inside his UFC career, he's faced some really good competition, and, you know, he suffered some tough losses recently, like I said. So Belfort still packs a little bit of a punch. I know he's not the same Belfort that was in his prime and pre-USADA and all that stuff we want to say, but still, I mean, Belfort is definitely one of those guys that's an experienced striker, and early on, he's going to be a threat to most. He did bounce back and get a win over Marquardt, so it's not like he's exactly totally done, but I mean, the fact is, we were talking about Alves possibly on the decline. Well, Belfort at age 40 and, you know, throughout his long, long MMA career, I mean, he's definitely on the decline. He's not the fighter he was, so this is a great opportunity for Hall to come in here and get a knockout win over, you know, a legendary fighter like Belfort, or even possibly if Belfort somehow survives to, you know, to see the scorecards. Hall, I would expect to get some takedowns along the way if that's the case and it drags out a little bit, and win the fight that way as well. So Hall has more options to win this fight. I do not trust his chin at -300 though, even with an aging and declining Belfort. But again, I think the Hall probably does, you know, well enough to get the W here and probably knocks Belfort out first before he gets clipped or whatnot. So, I mean, that's what logic says. That's what probably should happen. So I'm going to go with it. I'm not going to get too much more detail. It's a striker versus striker matchup. And we all know both these guys, what they can bring to the table. So the pick is Hall. I think he does defeat an aging and declining Belfort.
Vitor did end his losing skid in his last fight against Nate Marquardt, who's now retired. But yeah, I completely agree with you. Uriah Hall is the more athletic, more dynamic, more dangerous striker. I mean, Vitor's still explosive. He can still blitz like no other fighter pretty much, but that's about it. I mean, when he slows down his game and paces himself, I mean, he's just a guy at that point. He's not that dangerous anymore. So, I mean, he's only dangerous when he's capable of just being that lightning in a bottle type of person. So I think when Hall and Belfort are in there, unless Belfort just goes for it and tries to take Hall out in the first minute, I don't see how Vitor Belfort is going to win this fight. Uriah Hall has the better kicking game. He's got 5 inches in reach on him. He's quicker. The only thing that Belfort really has going for him is the fact that Hall doesn't have that great of a chin. So if Belfort connects with something, then there's still a outside possibility that he can hurt Hall and then take him out. But again, I just don't think that happens unless he does it quickly. So my pick is going to be Uriah Hall. I think he wins by knockout late in the first round once Belfort starts to slow down a little bit. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening in the featherweight division. We have Jeremy Stephens, who is 26-14, taking on Du Ho Choi, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Choi -180 to come back on Stephens at +140. Right now, it's Choi -155 to come back on Stephens at +135. So line margins have tightened up, and there hasn't been too much action on this fight as well. Choi did climb up a little bit. Now we're starting to see Stephens get some love back, and we're starting to see the action, you know, come back in his way. So this is going to be another interesting fight. I mean, you got striker versus striker. Both guys have the ability to end the fight with one punch. And both guys are, you know, obviously going to bring the fight and not back down at all. It's going to be a warrior versus warrior type of fight. And these guys have to deliver here. I mean, I'm expecting fireworks in this fight. It's lining up that way, and I'm expecting it to play out that way as well. I mean, I don't think there's no other choice here. I mean, Stephens is always in wars, especially with other strikers. I mean, you know what he brings to the table. I mean, if you watch the Cub Swanson fight that Choi was in, what else can you say about that? That was one of the best fights we've ever seen really play out. So I don't think that this fight's going to live up to that, but I think we're going to see a pretty exciting fight play out as well. And I think what you're going to see here is Choi be a little bit faster, be a little bit more effective. I mean, Stephens overall is definitely a dangerous striker. He honestly has the bigger power punch. There's no doubt about that, or the kick. I mean, Stephens is capable of knocking off his legs as well, but I still think that the speed of Choi is going to probably play in here, where Choi does have enough power that he's going to land and he's going to do some damage against Stephens along the way. So I think that's what happens here. I think Choi basically outpoints Stephens. It's going to be a war. It's going to be a firefight. I wouldn't be surprised if Stephens clips Choi along the way. I mean, Cub Swanson was able to have some success and hurt Choi in that fight as well. Choi, you know, managed to do okay in that spot, but still, it ended up being, like I said, a heck of a fight, and I think we'll probably see these guys hurt each other along the way here as well. So it's going to be interesting. But I mean, as far as the price goes, I'd be careful betting this fight, because I don't know if you want to lay too much chalk at this point against Stephen still, because he's that dangerous. But at the same time, I'm not so sure you want to grab the dog here, because I think Choi is a good spot right now to come in and get a solid win and you know, get back on track and start kind of gaining in popularity again. Because man, I mean, the guy, not that that loss set him back, but it didn't definitely made him a little bit more human, I think, in the public eye. And a win over Stephens would kind of erase some of that and bring back some of that allure that Choi had, I guess, along the way. Because, man, a lot of people are expecting this guy to make a deep, deep run at 145 pounds and possibly, you know, get a title shot along the way. So good fight. Looking forward to it. You know, it should be fight of the night. I mean, it has potential to be so. So we'll see how it plays out. But the pick, slight lean towards Choi for me, because I just think that he's a little bit younger, fresher, and I think his speed advantage is going to come into play, and it should be a heck of a firefight on the feet.
Yeah, I like Du Ho Choi. I mean, this is a kid that has that unbelievable explosive knockout power, and he doesn't look like he's that dangerous. I mean, he looks like Duo Choi has athleticism. He has good technical striking ability. He has a ton of heart, and he has a lot of surprising power. So against somebody like Jeremy Stephens, I think that that's a very good matchup for him. It kind of reminds me of the Sam Cecilia fight, although I will say, or that Stephens is a little tougher than Cecilia. I mean, his chin is a little stronger. He can handle strikes a little bit more. But overall, this is a guy in Choi that I think can just eat up Jeremy Stephens. I mean, Stephens has power, and we saw that a good striker with power in Cub Swanson can really punish Choi, but I think Swanson was able to make that work because he was so technical with his striking as well. And then he was able to rely more on his technique as the fight wore on, as they were both getting exhausted. And Jeremy Stephens, while he's dangerous and does have a lot of power, he's not that technical. He's never been, you know, a technician on the feet. And Duo Choi, I think, is the better pure striker. So I think Choi has the better pure striking. I think Choi is the more explosive guy. And honestly, Choi might be the more powerful guy. I mean, yeah, Stephens is known for having devastating power, but he's gone to decision in 9 of his last 10 fights. That's crazy. So, I mean, yeah, the power's there, but I think when you rely on it too much, people are able to avoid it. And I think Choi will be able to avoid it. And I think that he'll be able to pick up on any openings Stephens makes. And I think that if anybody gets knocked out in this fight, it's going to be Jeremy Stephens. I know that Stephens doesn't have a lot of knockout losses on his record, but I mean, Eve Edwards landed a picture perfect shot out of nowhere and got him back in the day. And I think Duo Choi is capable of doing that as well. So my pick is going to be Duo Choi, and I think that he wins possibly by knockout at some point. My only concern is if Choi slows down, if this turns into type of a slobber knocker brawl like the Swanson fight, and then maybe Stephens can take over there. But I think that this is Choi's fight to lose as long as it stays standing and he stays technical. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 124. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Saturday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.